Meeting will come to order. We don't quite have a quorum, so we'll just begin with Representative Portman's bill. And Representative Portman, we're moving obviously pretty quickly through bills, so if you could just be joined, with somebody we recognize from past years. And Representative Scalzi.
Madam Chair, I would move House File number 978 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bonding bill.
Representative Portman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, I should tell you, and I don't know if we have it in here, we received these first three bills from the Education Committee, and if you want to read this recommendation, they have all been heard and recommended, and I think there was a change in one, an amendment to one that we'll clarify, but so that you understand that these have been heard by the relevant committee. Representative Portman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I have to offer one small amendment. It's an oral amendment. Page 1, line 15, where it currently reads 240,000, to change that number to 300,000.
Representative Scalzi. Representative Scalzi moves on 1, line 8. Change 240,000 to 300,000 to get the bill before us. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion carries. Representative Portman.
Madam Chair, apparently that motion needed to be lines 1.8 and lines 1.15. Sorry.
And members also in 115, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed, motion carries. Representative Portman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a bill to purchase property adjacent to an elementary school in Brooklyn Park in my district. The elementary school is Riverview Elementary School. It's a math and science specialty school, and it focuses on educating children in the area of math and environmental science in particular. This site was owned by a family for many years and just recently came on the market. The school and the site are across the street from the Mississippi River in a really beautiful area, wooded area of Brooklyn Park. And I'm really pleased to have with me today former State Representative Darby Nelson to talk a little bit more about the bill.
Mr. Nelson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
A classmate to represent Sobers.
I see some familiar faces. I'll be brief. You have a long agenda. Darby Nelson, 1013 Vera Street, Champlin, Minnesota. I begin with a question. Will the subject of environmental science in our schools ever be more relevant, more important, or more urgent than it is right now? I don't think so, and that is what House File 978 is all about. Several years ago, as you've heard, Anoka Hennepin School District designated Riverview Elementary as a magnet school for math and environmental science. And the response from parents and students has been overwhelmingly positive, with the numbers of applicants significantly exceeding the available space. And I think the school's considerable success stems in part from the recognized importance of the environmental focus by district parents, as well as the outstanding quality of the school staff. Unfortunately, the program can't reach its full potential either in maximizing learning for its own students or serving as a regional and statewide model for effective environmental science learning because it lacks an on-site natural area. Fortuitously, this 2.15-acre parcel of land, including a part of a small wetland immediately adjacent to the school, has come up for sale. And House File 978 would provide the funds to enable the district to purchase that property. And I'd like to go on and explain why I think this is significant to you folks. Experiential learning, we all know this in our guts. Experiential learning is the most powerful of all the ways that we learn. And if I can just quote writer Annie Dillard, "The real learning begins when we sift our own dirt through our fingers, when we stalk our own creatures, when we stand knee-deep in the tugging currents of our own streams, when we sniff our own air." And as a college teacher of environmental science for over 30 years, I can attest to the particular importance of experiential learning in environmental studies. But without an adjacent outdoor site, Experiential learning becomes problematic. Travel to distant sites costs both class time and transportation money, thereby impeding or often literally preventing the ongoing use of field studies. I'd also add that an outdoor site accomplishes more than directly enhancing learning. Research unequivocally shows that the direct nature experience has a positive, significant positive psychological and behavioral impact on kids as well, including reducing stress, reducing anxiety, reducing depression, reducing behavioral conduct disorders, reducing symptoms of ADHD in general. And if you have not yet read the book, Last Child in the Woods, I would highly recommend it as a way of learning more about our children's growing nature deficit disorder and the very positive impacts that exposure to nature really has on kids. We expect Riverview School, by engaging its students in outdoor experiential learning, will produce curriculum materials to be made available to other school districts, encourage teacher visits from other districts to observe and gain insight on use of outdoor sites and thereby helping to jumpstart similar programs elsewhere, utilizing summer teacher workshops to help stimulate teacher reexamination of their own sites for similar learning opportunities. With the program, the commitment, and the quality staff to run with such a program already in place, Riverview is in an excellent position to become a showcase of experiential environmental science instruction. It would be unfortunate, to say the least, if this educational opportunity slipped through our kids' fingers. And I strongly urge you to support House File 97978. Thank you,
Mr. Nelson. Representative Hartman.
I think he said it all.
And there appear to be no questions, so obviously he did say it all. And the quote, of course, is a great way to move into spring, too, as we long to spend some time outside. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Representative Cornish?
Madam Chair.
Representative Scalzi?
Madam Chair, I would move House File 1563 for consideration and possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Cornish.
Madam Chair.
Representative Cornish.
Madam Chair, I have House File 1563, which creates $50 million worth of bonding for a cooperative facilities grant. It's been before the committee before and actually made it into the bonding bill last time and got out in conference. My introduction will be short. And
you're joined by Representative Brown.
Representative Brown and Christy Wetzel in the school district, Wiles United Central.
And Representative Cornish, I should say that this committee has lots of new members, so many would not have heard this previous.
Madam Chair and members, as you can tell, I've got a terrific cold, so what I'll do is turn the over to Representative Brown and then Christy Wetzel, and we'll be able to answer, I believe, most of your questions after our presentation. But, Madam Chair, I just wanted to preface these remarks with the school is even worse shape than we came to before, and this isn't really about we need your help. It's actually we need you to save our school. It's literally, without exaggerating, falling in, and Representative Brown will follow.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 1563 is a bill that modifies existing statutes that created the Cooperative Facilities Grant. It supplies $50 million from bonding to replenish this account. House File 1563 will also allow previously consolidated schools like USC and Wells to apply for funding from the Department of Education. USC Wells will use this money to remodel their school on one site in Wells, Minnesota. Schools that apply for this funding will have to match certain criteria set out in this bill, and the Department of Education will prioritize those applications. United South Central and Wells, like some other rural schools, suffers from being ag land rich, but not able to pass a referendum because of the elevated tax rate on ag land and the cost to the homeowners and the renters. And I'd like to introduce Ms. Christy Wetzel of Wells, Minnesota, the chairwoman of the United South Central School District. Ms. Wetzel will tell you more about the school and answer your questions.
Ms. Westholt, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Nice to see you again. Members, I thank you for your time and your attention. Unfortunately, Representative Junkie isn't here right now, but this is actually a building that would be quite disturbing to him because he did, in fact, graduate from this building. They're old and they're falling apart, sometimes on top of us, but definitely around us, as you can see from these pictures. Isn't that a horrible way to describe the buildings designed to educate our children? Welcome to school life at United South Central. These are the same buildings our children will spend hundreds of hours for 13 years of their life learning everything essential to become productive, contributing members of society. We teach them reading, writing, mathematics, and so much more in buildings the Minnesota Department of Education has deemed less than safe, according to a 2003 advisory letter, and I quote, USC's school facilities will continue to age and deteriorate, as will the environment for learning and teaching that supports students' achievement efforts and their preparations for the challenges of the 21st century. I am here today as a mother of elementary students, a concerned citizen, and USC School Board Chair, but most importantly, I'm here as a representative for the voices that aren't heard, our USC students. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to share our needs and show you the situation we are faced with. Allow me to take a few minutes to give you a factual tour and explore firsthand the building issues that plague our district and the struggles our students face Monday through Friday, September to June, preschool to graduation. United South Central is comprised of six unique and individual communities. The high school and elementary are located in Wells, and our middle school is located in Keister, 16 miles south. Our buildings are among the oldest 2.7% of all school districts in Minnesota. We have 824 students, and 48% of those students qualify for free and reduced price lunches. 70% of our students live in the northernmost part of our school district. Our buildings, as well as many buildings in the districts you represent, have numerous educational deficiencies. Most classrooms are 23 to 33% smaller than state guidelines. 20 of our traditional classrooms are now used as special education rooms, federally and state mandated student support programs, and preschool classrooms. Our classrooms do not have the space for computers, and they lack the infrastructure to support networks and the electrical needs of today's technology. We have minimal building security measures to prevent intruders from accessing student classrooms. Our structural deficiencies are numerous, and they include most roofs being 20-plus years old, and they need to be replaced. Our heating system is inefficient, and it dates back to 1932. Our main water supply is fed through pipes dating back to 1932, and in many cases they're nearly plugged with mineral deposits and they leak. Needless to say, the water is foul. Our main electrical service panel uses fuses and dates back to the 1930s. All windows are single-paned and drafty. Acoustic tiles often fall on top of students' heads and books. There is no safe drop-off or pickup locations for our children because our school is located on a busy highway. We have 8 pages of fire code violations, and that represents hundreds of thousands of dollars of repairs. We have tried to pass bond referendums. In fact, we've tried 3 times. In April 2002, we tried to pass a $32 million building. 25% voted yes, 75% voted no. At the time, nearly $15 million of this referendum would have been paid for by debt service equalization. In May of 2005, we went back to the voters with a $24.6 million building. 40% voted yes, 60% voted no. At that time, only $200,000 would have been covered through debt equalization. In December 2005, we went back with the same vote. 42% voted yes and 58% voted no. What makes our district unique? We are a consolidation of 6 communities into 1 school district. 2 communities suffered school building closings in the past 9 years, and our Keister Middle School will close in June of 2008. Our buildings are not centrally located, which adds to our open enrollment problem. 170, or nearly 20% of our students, open enroll out to other school districts, primarily because of our building conditions. The City of Wells hasn't passed a building referendum in over 42 years. 60% of Wells residents voted yes to referendums in both May and December of 2005. 70% of a bond for a new school will be paid by agricultural land taxes. Outside investors have caused land values and property taxes to increase at an unrealistic rate for local farmers who purchase land for thousands less an acre. These same investors passed increased property taxes expenses back onto the shoulders of the renting farmers with increased per acre rent fees. Non-homestead farmland valued at $3,000 an acre, would have been taxed an additional $9.21 an acre for 25 years. The county assessor is reporting a 15% increase in ag land values from the 2006 assessment to the 2007. Under the current law, USC does not qualify for debt equalization based on the inflated land values and declining enrollments. We did a two-year facility study done by a local group of volunteers, which showed a pre-K through 12 building on one site, new, would cost, in today's dollars, $28 million. And it was our best option of the nearly 15 different options explored. It was a building designed to meet the ever-changing dynamics of a 21st century education, and a new building is designed to be cost-effective and efficient. Our minimum maintenance projects on our existing buildings would cost approximately $11 million, and we would not be fixing any of the educational deficiencies. The study also showed that going to one site would save our district $350,000 a year. This would be well over $9 million in a 20-year bond referendum life. House File 1563 seeks money from the state to lower the face values of bond referendums for schools like USC. And I understand concerns from some legislators with this method. I am not proposing a new precedent for funding schools with bonding money. Our previous and very well-respected representative, Henry Collis, who served our district for 28 years, used this very same method to bring our neighboring school district, Blue Earth Area Schools, several million dollars for a new building. On your handout, I've shared some demographic information about USC. We are here today looking for a solution. Our Constitution calls for a uniform system of public schools. If we're practicing uniformity, I ask you, do all schools in the state of Minnesota look like these pictures? Our students have to make do in a building where the drinking fountains are covered in plastic to prevent their use, or forced to shower after Phi Ed using water that is foul. We are a four-star school in math and a five-star school in English. And I often wonder what kind of educational accomplishments our students could achieve if their learning environment was conducive to their quality of work. Everyone in our communities agree we need to do something with our buildings. The truth is, we will never pass a bond referendum because of the cost to the taxpayers. Until we have some sense of equality with regard to the percentage paid by our ag land owners, USC will remain at a critical crossroads. As you can see, this is truly a bipartisan issue. It's about kids. I know you're looking at a number of ways to solve the school building crisis, debt service being one. My concern is that USC will continue to look like a wealthy district because of inflated land values and declining enrollment, when in fact, we are an impoverished district with nearly 50% of our students receiving free and reduced price lunches based on their parents' income. And yet, we will still fall off the formula to qualify for debt service equalization and receive little or no state assistance. I implore you to examine the situation and support House File 1563, helping USC to provide a safe school enabling our children to empower them with the tools necessary to prepare them for success for generations to come. With the generous help from representatives like you, USC will be able to provide a building that to meet the needs of children receiving a 21st century education. Without help, we will be forced to continue on our same path until all of our buildings are condemned and the health and well-being of our children is jeopardized. Thank you so much for your consideration, and I am open to any questions.
Representative Junkie, before you arrived, they did point out that though their building is sadly lacking, they have not lacked over their history for some very fine students who have passed through there. School.
Well,
Madam Chair, that was the intent.
Madam Chair,
Representative Junkie.
I will be checking the tape later on, I was a graduate in 1977 from Wells Easton. I was a Wildcat. I lettered 12 times this school and was an honor student, I'm proud to say. But they are responsible for what you see sitting here today, good or bad. And I can tell you all these pictures, these boilers you see in the pictures and going around. There's a little tunnel over here on the other side. It's a shortcut from one building to another. And I can also tell you that the roofs and the damage you see on the roof probably is partly due to me, too, because I know in Lyle Wright's AV room that we used to hang out in, us AV people, you could go out on the roof and, again, across to another building. We did that all the time, too. So there was a number of things here that I maybe helped deteriorate, I have to admit. But
did we get historical designation for some things?
Yeah. We'll put a plaque up down that tunnel. But Madam Chair, in all seriousness, it does sadden me and others to see what goes on with some. And this isn't by far the only district across rural Minnesota that's having these problems. We're trying to address them in some ways, whether it's through help this way. I think there's probably other creative ways. I keep dreaming of the day, Madam Chair, that we're funding windmills for every school district in this part of the state that have wind resources so they can tap into that money source for their bonding or for their other expenses. I think we need to be creative on things like that. I will also say, you know, to the folks at the table, you know, we are working on some of the peripheral things like the debt equalization on the inflated land you talk about. That's a problem everywhere. Farmland has skyrocketed. We haven't adjusted the average rate of our properties out there since 2001, and now it's 2007, and our equalization has gone away. And I know that Representative Greiling has that as one of her top priorities, and Representative Marquardt to address this here, and I hope they do. We're also working on House Garage 1 acre for your bond referendum so that, you know, there isn't an argument that, well, it's the farmland and we don't want to pay for that because it's different than in town, and you get this, as you know, the farmer and the city folk argument coming in. So we do need to work with this, and because, again, if the committee ever travels and gets a chance to stop into some of these schools, you will just shake your head in dissatisfaction and wonder, you know, what happened to this state of education, Minnesota, and our facilities. But I thank you for coming, and say hi to the folks in Wells and tell them I'm alive and well and still plugging along.
And I will tell you that the hundreds of people who were attending the town hall meeting in my district also shook their heads because the people from this area have visited my office, and I was able to tell the people in my district about this story and the 42 years when a bond referendum was not passed and the condition of the school. And I know the people in my district shared that as well. Representative Lanning has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Cornish and Representative Brown and Chair Wetzel, for bringing this matter to us. I'm very sympathetic. In fact, in this very room the other night, we considered some bills that would address this situation. I carry a bill on debt service equalization that would make some of the important changes that are needed. One of the other solutions has to do with how we tax farmland, and while that may have some potential as we put together the tax bill in providing some relief, we need to understand that it does do some shifting. And if you shift it off the ag land, you may shift it to your homeowners, and you may have a different set of upset constituents. But my question, I was struck by when you said that in 2002 that you knew that debt equalization was going to pay $15 million of this total $32 million cost, and yet the voters overwhelmingly rejected it. It makes me wonder if that was really marketed to your voters, because if we restore this debt equalization, I would hope that you'd not get the same result. If the state is going to pay nearly half or over 40% on the cost, could you say something more about that election? Was that really told clearly to the voters?
Ms. Wetzel.
Representative Lanning, thank you very much. It was actually before I was a board member, and I can tell you honestly that it was a learning process. There were some dynamics going on behind the scenes that led to some credibility issues from the people who were educating the public. the December of 05 and May 05 bond referendums, I personally participated in educating all of our communities, and we did have a number of community meetings. As a matter of fact, 2 years worth of community meetings. We went through the entire progression of, you know, remodeling two buildings to ultimately building one new building. I would say, if they could fix debt service equalization, and I have seen and I have had Mr. Strom run some numbers of what Representative Welty's bill would look like, and actually what it does is it shifts the burden from the ag landowner to the city to homestead city property 53% to 55% higher than current law, the tax burden. So my concerns are, and I had the pleasure of being able to listen to your testimony with your debt equalization bill, and I hope that we can, you know, find some solution amongst those three. If debt service equalization was fixed, we would probably stand a chance. I have a school district that's very savvy about debt service equalization. Our bonding company was amazed. Most times, most communities know very little about debt service equalization, and our voters know about debt service equalization. So I would have to go back to a lack of trust on the board's part from community members on the $32 million, because quite honestly, it was a deal. That $15 million paid by the state, that is a deal.
Representative Lemmy.
Well, thank you for that. We convinced our voters in 2002 to approve a $64 million bond issue because of debt service equalization. With the debt service equalization today, there's no way the voters in my district would have gone for a $64 million bond issue. So that's why I'm particularly interested in what you're facing.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Wetzel.
Representative Lanning, I also had the privilege of listening to your superintendent say that the next time they need to go to a bond referendum, which will probably be in the very near future, that they will have a tough time selling, just because I think his numbers were $40 million was being allocated to debt service equalization in 2001, and now is $11 million that the state is contributing in the form of debt service. I'm hesitant with debt service equalization because our district does know that the $15 million we would have seen in 02 would have decreased significantly because of our ag land values and just falling off the formula. So will my district believe that debt service equalization is going to be the answer in our particular case? I'm skeptical.
Thank you. Representative Leader has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can attest to the need for these schools. I've been in them. But I'd like to question, have you resolved the issue where you're going to locate the new school between, was it Bryceland, Keister, and Wells? That's been an ongoing fight.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Just briefly.
Yep. It will end up, if we did do a new school, which isn't really on the plate right now, we're just looking at options that we think the voters will pass, it would be located in Wells simply because 70% of our students are coming from the northernmost part of our school district and not the southern part. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cornish and Representative Brown, for bringing the issue before us. Members, in honor of our committee administrator, Jenny Nash's birthday, we have Girl Scout cookies, and in fact, if somebody puts them at the end of a table. We have so many that audience members are invited to take them too, because I happen to have three grandchildren and I can bring these for the next couple of weeks, I think. Representative Saylor. And we're a little behind, so we're asking people to be very brief. This has already been heard in K-12. And was amended there, and so you have a first committee engrossment before you. So very briefly, Representative Saylor, we need to introduce.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Representative Saylor. Representative Galvey.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And I would introduce House File 1120 and recommend for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Galvey moves House File 1120. Representative Saylor.
Again, thank you, Madam Chair and members. I will just simply say that the Red Lake School District has been coming before the state of Minnesota in an ongoing saga, if you will, to complete the school buildings that are necessary at the Red Lake District. I will simply say that as some districts find it difficult or impossible to finance construction projects due to limited or non-existent tax base, those districts qualify for state assistance under the maximum effort school aid law, which is what we are applying for here. And I will turn it over at this point to Monty Hammett, the Red Lake School District representative, to go over the details in the interest of brevity. Thank you.
Mr. Hammett, welcome to the committee. And again, literally, we're saying minutes here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Monty Hammett, the Red Lake School District. I suppose in the essence of time, we could just say, would you pass the bill, please? I got that line from Mr. Rukavina. Madam Chair and committee members, thank you very much. I have with me also is Troy Miller, the lead architect for DLR Group that's on our project. Madam Chair and as committee members, and as we've testified over the last 5 years, the project is here is to provide adequate and educational facilities for our students that have been in inadequate and facilities that have been condemned for mold, et cetera, over the years of going back 1949. We want to thank Madam Chair, your committee, your members. Also want to, happy birthday, Jenny. Thank all your staff for all the kind work and help that they have given us and everyone on this project. Everything is progressing. As first was implemented in 2002 with the funding of $12.4 million, we got the $18 million. And all of these, Madam Chair and committee members, have been in a phased basis. Original request was for $41 million to do the entire school district, which we have two elementary schools. It's Benema and Red Lake. We have a newly childhood facility also at Red Lake. And we have no school and high school. That would have done and completed the entire facilities. And with the lack of funding and constraints of which the legislative body and the administration have, we've been able to do and put together in a phased portion, as we have stated before the committees, Madam Chair, is we've learned how really to phase very well, and we just would like, Madam Chair, the committee's help and support to finish our middle school, high school this year so we can move forward without having the students walking around construction projects, pipes sticking out the walls, and et cetera. With that, Madam Chair, I'll try to answer any questions.
Okay. And does Mr. Miller have anything additional? You're here for questions?
I will take your question.
Okay. I think we may have none. So we thank you very much for bringing the bill forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
And Representative, is Representative Clark in the room?
Here.
And in the interest of time, if any, every author comes and if you bring your testifier, we're just giving a few minutes to every bill, so.
Okay.
Representative Scalzi?
Madam Chair, thank you. I would move House File 1690 for consideration and possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm really happy to be here. This committee last year come to this bill. I brought my team with me from the neighborhood. You all helped us last year with passing legislation that would create a community cultural center in a park in Minneapolis, a small park that is one of only two parks in the whole city of Minneapolis who has no place, no building for thousands of children to go. Within six blocks, within three blocks, there are 6,000 children, is that right? Or three blocks, 6,000 children? Okay, got that right. Maybe more, but those are the ones we know, our county. And this is a place that does not have yet a building. However, last year this committee did provide us with $3.5 million to start that project to build the community center. And it's been quite a wonderful experience of bringing together a whole diverse community to plan this building, and we are working with architects and in that process. The bill before you tonight comes with, or today, comes with actually some things that we've identified that are additional needs to actually make this building work and be all that it needs to be in the neighborhood. You'll notice that we're asking for dollars to help pay for the LEED certification. We found out in working this process through that it's going to cost us about $40,000 to get this building certified under the LEED process, and we do want this to be a very green building, a building that uses renewable energy and so on. The wellness center, that's the next item on here, Subdivision 3, is something that the Minneapolis Park Board is trying to put into several park buildings, and we want to make sure that this is one of them that gets it, and this $900,000 is approximately the amount of money we understand it would take to set up this wellness center. This is a community, again, where people can't afford to go necessarily to the Y or a health club or so on. We want to make sure that this is available to the folks right there in that community. The last part is to make the building a sustainable green building. And although I don't have an actual number in there, we think it's approximately about $2 million to incorporate a whole energy system that would make the building be green and recycle what we can and have geothermal heating. So, Madam Chair, that's the bill. I just wanted to ask a couple of people to say a few things, and I do want to thank you for your help and leadership on this last year.
I did have the good fortune to visit and had really quite a wonderful presentation and a very clear demonstration of the huge need in that neighborhood and all of the children for a safe place to gather. Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Bill Ziegler. I'm executive director.
Bill
Ziegler? Yes, ma'am. Executive director of Little Earth of Nine Tribes. Thanks for allowing me a minute here to visit with you. I guess the most amazing thing that I've seen the past year since last year, since the committee and legislature approved the $3.5 million bonding bill, is I guess the hope and excitement in the eyes of the children. Of course, at Little Earth, I work on a daily basis with the community, and that's really the thing that's grabbed me the most, you know, is just seeing how excited the community is about the prospects of having a top-notch building right within the community. You know, so many times and for so long, the community's gotten the short end of the stick on everything. You know, you were dealing with a community of very poor people, so for years and years, the community settled for what's, you know, just been handed to us. So to see the community empowered and believing the dream that this is something that can happen, it's an amazing thing. For over 10 years, 15 years, different groups have been working on this and trying to get this thing put in place. And the fact that we finally got this ball rolling, it's a nice thing to see. And just so you all know that the decisions that you all make here, I know they're tough decisions to make. You have a lot of different things on your plate. But a decision like this really does have a direct impact on children's lives, and I guess that's the most important thing, in my opinion, that y'all can do. Thank you.
I might mention Mr. Ziegler is on the steering committee of the group that has actually been driving the process since the bonds were approved.
Thank you.
Hi, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm going to be the statistician. My name is Carol Pass, and I'm from East Phillips. I'm the president of the East Phillips organization, and we represent many different groups over there. And I will say that while we've waited to build this building for years and years, as Bill has said, we've had a 48% increase in families with children under 18. Since the 90 census, we've had a 42% increase in youth from about 14 to 19, and a 39% increase in children from about 10 to 14. So we have enormous numbers of children. Some other things that just to kind of put this in perspective, is that we have been hosting on Bloomington Avenue a serious crime wave, and we talked about this last year when we came, because we noticed, for one thing, that when Mayor Rybick gave his report on keeping the north side free from crime, he opened the park buildings and he increased the program money, and it actually dropped the crime rate significantly. We don't have a park building to keep open. And we don't have any place to put programs for kids. So we couldn't deal with that in the same manner. Instead, we're out on the street dealing with this ourselves. And actually, we are when we did a statistical study of the people coming and buying drugs in the drug selling areas and prostitution, some 60% of these people come from outside of the city of Minneapolis. They don't even come from the near metro area. We are hosting people that are involved in crime from Bagley, Minnesota, Rochester, Duluth, etc. This is 60%. We need to keep our kids occupied. They need to have meaningful stuff to do to not get them involved in and be sucked into this scene. It's very tempting and alluring. We have, and again, Bill is saying that we have children who come from families with no car, many with no phone. Some of the income levels are below 10% of the median income. We need to bring in programs and grant money. And we can't do this. We have no place to put this without this building. So we want to cut back the amount of extra money that it's going to cost, put the 3.5 directly into the building itself. Thanks.
Welcome to the committee.
I'm going to make it quick since we don't have enough time. My name is Josiah Cordian. I work for Minneapolis Park Board, and also I'm in the EPIC East Phillips Intensive Coalition as a board member also. And I'm just going to say it all out. When we got $3.5 million, we were all happy, and, you know, we're like, okay, we're going to make a fabulous park and everything. And then we had various meetings, and, you know, we did a couple surveys into the community and said, what do you want to see in the community? And everybody wants a full-size gym, and, you know, we gave them a couple options. And after we added up all the prices and stuff and on how much the cost is going to be, and we saw $3.5 million, and, you know, we kind of said, it's not going to do it, you know. We still need a little bit more. And, well, the thing is, we tried to fundraise or something, and, you know, we still can't get enough. And, you know, I think we need a little more help. So it's up to you guys, and, you know, we appreciate it, all the help, and, you know.
And if you would sign in so that we make sure we get the spelling of your name correctly for the minutes, there's a sign-in sheet.
Sure.
Representative Clark, we have one more. One more person.
Hello, my name is Dr. Kelly Morgan. I live at Monmouth of the United Tribes, and I'm a very proud resident to live there. We have a community that is a community that has several disparities that you're well aware of, I'm certain. We deserve a park building that is of the magnitude that will serve the entire community. We have several ethnic groups that deserve to be served. We know that you make very tough decisions. This could be a very visionary stance that this committee and this legislature can take on behalf of the residents of Phillips community. And those disparities, those health disparities, those crime disparities that we're faced with in that community, this can help us as a community, as residents in that community, to help resolve some of those disparities. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Morgan. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much for letting me talk today. My name is Rosie Cruz, and I live in East Phillips neighborhood about 12 years over there, and I just think, I've been seeing every single day how the drug units and everything is growing, but right now, since I've become a block leader, it's just been wonderful to see all our little children and mother approach to us. And thank you very much for all these wonderful people that are working so hard every day, every single day to, you know, our neighborhood become better. And we're working very hard, but we really, really appreciate everything that you guys done for us today. But today we are here to ask you to understand, to see how, you know, those little kids are really are in need. And really, they really need that. And we just focus on that and the health and then education. Our kids is going to be different, and that neighborhood is going to be so different. Thank you very much.
Well, you're all good ambassadors for the cause. One final.
My name is Lorraine LaPlaine. I'm the co-chairperson for the Metropolitan Urban Union Directors. I just want to say briefly that East Phillip Park and the Phillips neighborhood community is an expression of a very white community, and even though we're a microcosmic expression of that community, we represent many different colors there, and we'd like to see a park built that is world class and that has a lot of futuristic looks at it, you know, and I think that has to be energy efficient and it has to represent all of us. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it. Is the motion to consider this for possible inclusion?
Thank you. Yes, we've made the motion.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
Representative, I'm sorry. Representative House has a question.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Clark, or maybe Madam Chair can tell me, why is the fiscal age of the Metropolitan Council?
Oh, excuse me. You know what, Madam Chair? I think that may need to be corrected, and that was brought to me my attention as we came in. So actually, thank you, Representative House. If we could
for this.
Strike the on line 1.8, the words Metropolitan Council for a grant to, that would put it in the proper form. And I'm sorry, that was just, drafting.
Madam Chair, I would move to on line 1.8, strike the words Metropolitan Council for a grant to the.
All in favor of that amendment?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Motion carried.
I really appreciate members' consideration.
Just one quick follow-up. Representative Clark, yeah. Have I been there before? Is a year or two ago with you and Senator Linda Berglund?
Is that you might have been on the bus that took a tour when they.
No, I drove there. I believe there was an Indian Affairs Council meeting there and something else going on.
I'm not sure about that, but if you weren't there, I want to bring you there very soon so we can.
Bloomington, Franklin, somewhere
yes, it's
there?
It's 24, yes.
Then I've
right on Cedar Avenue and
24.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then I've been there.
And actually, Madam Chair, you all are invited. I'd love to invite you to the area. When spring comes, there's beautiful trees on the boundary there.
And Representative Clark, we won't change the motion now, but we actually should have left it just as it is because, in fact, Deb Dyson reminds us that previous language had the route through this way, but we don't need to.
Wiser minds than mine are at work here. I guess we'll do what needs to be done.
Yes. But this is just fine for
now.
Thank you. So thank you all for joining us. Happy birthday.
Somebody.
Representative Haas. Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I would move House File 348 for consideration today and for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Haas, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. To my bill.
You're on a roll.
My bill asks for $11 million appropriation to Minnesota University Systems for the National Hockey Center at St. Cloud State. The National Hockey Center was one of the original jewels in the national sports facilities that was created a decade plus ago. And it is time for rejuvenation and updating of that facility. You may have recognized this program or this request because it is a second-year request. It was traveling very well last year. It is also going pretty well in the Senate this year. Making it a little bit different from last year's request and in the planning, it is now blended with a $2 million fundraiser. So it is the $13 million project with $11 million coming from bonding and $2 million from donations. And I have already made one donation. I plan to make another. My first donation was only a dollar. Before I give other testimony.
We hope you're just a little bit more generous this
yes.
time around.
You probably noticed I had my flag tie on today for Rucker Bainer's flag bill, and I was so very happy because my tie says it's made in the United States, but then I turned it over and it says imported fabric 100% silk, so I don't know if the worms have to come from the United States, the silkworm, or just the people that sew it, but I was lucky to have half. With me today is a few guests, but we're only going to ask questions of and have one testifier for time's sake.
Well, we're happy to hear from the gentleman at the microphone.
Thank you, Chair Hausman. My name is Steve Ludwig. I'm the Administrative Vice President at St. Cloud State University. We've provided to you each a document that I believe provides you a lot of the salient points about the project that we're anticipating, and we're pleased to have the opportunity to present it to you. we're enthused that this will provide additional resources for allowing improved accessibility and improved service to the people throughout the region that use this facility. We also did design the facility on a very tight budget in 1988, but left room on the site for this addition in the future, and we believe the time has come for this to go forward. With me today on my beyond, to the left of Representative Hawes is Dr. Morris Kurtz, the athletic director for St. Cloud State University, and on my right is Mr. Bill Prout, who is the longtime president of the Center Ice Club, our booster club that will be play a significant role in the fundraising for the additional $2 million. Over the time that we've operated the building, in addition to paying the regular operating costs and maintaining the building, between athletics and some no-interest loans for energy conservation, we've invested something over $1 million in it over the last years ourselves, and we're anxious to have some assistance so we continue to provide an appropriate venue in our region for athletics and recreation. And we will stand for questions.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Haas testifiers. As a graduate of St. Cloud State University and a person whose father-in-law was a volunteer hockey coach at St. Cloud State, I'm wondering, are you sure you're asking for enough money?
I represent Haas.
Coach Franny would be very, very proud of you. and he was a great influence on hockey and hockey at St. Cloud State. And I think this is just the right amount. I'm very happy with the fundraiser going with it because I think that is a way to go. And it is a jewel. It was one of the national jewels, and it is time to shine it up a little bit.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Representative Haas. I'm just trying to stay on Bill's Christmas list.
You've made it, I'm sure, that representative.
And I should point out that while you were testifying, our committee legislative assistant, Lori Nissel, was looking for her dormitory because she is a graduate of this.
Madam Chair and committee members, the college was the 6 best years of my life, yeah. I'll tell you that.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Ludwig, perhaps you could answer this question, but I see that you're estimating that you could raise $2 million from private sources. How did you arrive at that? Did you do a fundraising feasibility on this, or how did you arrive at the $2
million? Mr. Ludwig.
Chair Hausman and Representative Lanning, we've done some study recently on our potential to raise money in general at the university, and we sat down with Vice President Jill Rudnitsky, who's in charge of university advancement, and tried to make an educated guess based on the research and their professional expertise on what was the kind of number that we could do, and we think that this is a reasonable number, a little bit of a stretch, but a good number that over the time that we would anticipate this, that it's a prudent estimate and a little bit of a stretch for him, but we think it's a good number.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you. But there wasn't a formal fundraising study done on this at all. That's the best educated estimate on the part of staff that are doing fundraising for the university.
Chair Hoffman, Representative Lanning, yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
Representative Finkelstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Haas, I have a question in your bill. Line 9, it talks about pre-design, and in your materials it says that pre-design is complete, and it looks like on the spreadsheet pre-design, $53,000 is complete and is not in the request. So what's the status of that?
Madam Chair, I would transfer to the question to the experts, but I think there is still some pre-design left. Let us find out for sure.
Which person is the best? Mr. Ludwig.
Chair Hausman and Representative Tinglestad, I think. In any case, we did pay for the pre-design out of our funds at the university. The pre-design is complete, so I believe that technically the pre-design, if it's appropriate, could be deleted from the bill. The total cost of the project is $13,053,000. The $53,000 is what we paid for the pre-design. The $13 million is to complete design work and then construct and equip the facility.
Madam Chair, normally I'd say let's pull it out of the bill, but after experiencing with Representative Seitel's bill, I'd say let's just leave it in.
Further questions of the testifiers? If not, I think we have a clear sense of the project. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for listening. We appreciate you.
Representative Nelson. Members, the next bill, you may recall when Minshew made their presentation, the committee asked specific questions about two particular campuses as we looked at the list, parallel campuses and buildings built in the same year, and we were just curious whether one just weathered the storm better than the other. And so what you have before you is in a sense sort of an answer to that question. And Representative Scalzi?
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I would move House File 891 for consideration today and possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This must be alma mater week because this is Hennepin Technical College North is where I went to school. And unlike Representative Junkie, I'm not going to claim credit for the damage that was here because this is just... this is just... These buildings were new when I went to school. I'm not going to say how long ago, but that now they just need to be some little tender, loving care to be upgraded. The bill has to do with, again, as you said, they funded in the HEPRA, they funded the South Campus, but they didn't fund the North Campus. Both buildings were built at the same time. This is as far as asbestos removal and some repairs and replacement of heating, air conditioning system, and... I have with me Catherine Jeffries from the president of the college, and I'll let her testify.
Dr. Jeffries, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and thank you, Representative Nelson, for inviting me to be with you here today. I am in absolute agreement with him that the buildings are in need of some tender, loving care. He didn't state the age of the buildings, but I will. They are 35 years old, and they were built in 1972. The facilities are equal, and the amount of repair relative to the removal of the asbestos insulation around the piping, the replacement of the sprinkler heads, is equal for both campuses. We greatly appreciate your consideration of this House file, and I just want to express that as a new president of the college, it's important for us to maintain a safe environment. The asbestos, as you well know, is a hazardous issue, a hazardous material, so this is a safety concern for us. But it's also a matter of making our environment much more conducive for the college students who attend courses at our institution and for the staff who work there. Thank you for your consideration.
By the way, members, I should explain the sound you just heard. What we've and you hear it periodically, we've been told that when that happens, someone's cell phone in the room is going off on silent, and it does that little buzz. When we check to see if something was malfunctioning, and someone believes that that may be what, in fact, is happening. I'm not certain. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess the question I have is, I know that Minshew always puts together a very specific list in this. Does this jump outside that box, and is this going to start a process that would be very, very sensitive? So I would, maybe the new president isn't aware of, but the pecking order on that Minshew list is pretty profound.
And it actually, as I introduced it, they're sort of here at our request. When Minshew was here, we simply observed there were two campuses and two buildings built at the same time, and it was just, you know, in some ways sort of a curiosity question, and so I think the bill is before us sort of in answer to a question we raised when Minshew was before us, unless the president or the author have anything.
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I am aware of the process, and I did inform the system office that I would be coming today at the request of Representative Nelson.
Okay.
Any further questions? If not, we thank you for bringing
Thank you for hearing us.
Thank you.
This went better than the bill I had in the last committee.
Where were you?
Representative Mahoney, I think, is out of the room right now. So, oh, there you are.
You didn't have to have sample students.
Oh.
That's corny.
Representative Scalzi. Oh, no, Representative Mahoney can make this motion himself. I'm sorry. Representative Mahoney?
Members,
for the motion?
My motion is for House File 132 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the bonding bill. And many of you have been visited. I won't try to, trying to go a little bit with brevity, I will try to keep it that way.
But I have an
amendment.
You're welcome, though, to invite to the...
I have lots of people here that would love to testify, we'll keep it as brief as we can. But I would like to add...
You notice we put you at the end so you could take whatever remaining. We just have to make a procedural motion with Representative Junkie, but you are, in fact, the last bill,
well,
so...
There's questions. We've got tons of people here.
All right. Yours, we thought, was a little more complicated.
I have the 813 amendment, which...
Representative Junkie, you did... Representative Mahoney, you did move the bill.
I did move the bill.
Okay.
Amendment.
So the Representative Mahoney moves A-13 to get the bill in the
order that
order
I would
that
like
you
it
would
now.
Like to
sure.
present it. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion carries, and the bill is now before you as the author intends to present it to us.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I hope you all got this packet in your packet here. This is an overview of kind of a light, quick overview of the bill. I will go over the bill first and then go over a little bit of the packet. This bill establishes a request for $279 million in bonding authority to the University of Minnesota, which would pay for 90% of the construction of 600,000 square feet of biomedical science research facilities, which the university will own and which will be owned and operated by the University of Minnesota. The University of Minnesota will provide a match of 10% of the cost for the Minnesota biomedical research. It also establishes an authority which releases the money and kind of makes sure the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted. The biggest question I have gotten as this bill has progressed is, well, we won't get a chance to vote on any of this money. Yes, we will. We will get a chance to vote on it right now. Do we think that the state of Minnesota should invest $280 million in the bioscience research? If you look at your packet here, I think it's on the third page. Nope, I'm sorry. This is the fourth page. And talks about what's being invested around the nation. UCLA, University of Michigan, University of Wisconsin, Washington, University of California, San Francisco are all investing millions and millions of dollars in an industry whose average wages are approximately $60,000 to $65,000, and creates about five jobs, good paying jobs, very good paying jobs for every one job in the industry. Many of you stopped at MenBio on the Hill yesterday. I don't know if you caught that there's approximately 35,000 jobs in the bioscience industry as it is today. This is the cutting edge of tomorrow. We have to have the vision to invest in order for the university to continue to spawn good ideas that can be turned into commercial products. What the amendment did is change the completion dates for these buildings. One of the things we're trying to do is lay out a guideline for when these buildings have to be up, because the university is trying, and rather successfully in many cases, to recruit top-notch scientists and researchers. This amendment puts it out Well, I can just say it. On page 6 of the bill, you have the years. I've got to get the actual bill out so I'm not making a mistake here. And starting on 6-8, puts one building to be completed in 08, one in 09, 11, 12, 11, 13, and 15. And we're changing this to 08, 2010, 2012, and 2014. Keeps us on track to get these projects done in a timely manner and gives the university a timeline for when they need to bring their research scientists here. I've got more information on this than sometimes I really care to. I've got a file of about 2.5 inches thick in my office. I've got Marty McDonough and Fritz, the financial officer from the... I've already mangled his name twice in introducing
him. We know Fitz.
I'm not going to mangle it a third time. So, Madam Chair, I will open this up for questions, and I may need help.
So, in the amendment that we added, you've changed the timeline, assuming that the first of the five would be this year. Is that
correct?
And just to clarify, because I thought I had heard a different number in the Senate, and that was 14.4 or something like that, but I see here that would be 16.2. Is that...
You can call Fitzmuller up if you would like.
Right.
My belief is that is less the 14 is less the university's part.
It is 16. So if I saw 14...
Why don't you come on up?
Mr. Fitzenrider? So 14.4 doesn't relate to anything?
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Richard Fitzenrider. I'm the Chief Financial Officer and Treasurer at the University of Minnesota. I'm not familiar with that number. The proposal has always been the first project, the 90% share is 16.2. And the university's match is
1.8. Okay. My memory probably isn't correct.
No, that's the number I had heard also, Madam Chair.
Okay. Okay, questions for either the author or Mr. Fitzrider or others from the university. Because there are new people on the committee, when we talked about this earlier, just so that members are aware, as we approve this, and maybe some of this has been clarified with Peter Sausen and others, is the entire amount immediately acknowledged as part of that kind of 3% threshold, or do they only count the bonds we let in any given year?
Madam Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
The bonds that are let only count against the bonding bill of the year that they're let in. So this year it would be 16, whatever, the following year or the following building, I think is in 2010, is it $40 million, would be counted in the 2010 year. I think the second one is closing in on $50 million, and that is 2012. And then from there it goes... The numbers out here are in your packet at 16.2, and it's the first building, and I better get the second one here. So the third one is 44 million in 2010, and 2014 you would have 65.4, and go ahead. Yeah. So they are counted against the bonding bill that they are let in. And again, if you've got the packet in front of you, I'll just read it as going down the line. The 90% state share is 16.2 is in 08, 43.8 is in 2010, 65.4 is in 2012, 72.6 is in 14, and 80 million is in 2015. So they would be counted as they are used. And that is the duty of that particular body. That's the second half of the A13 amendment, the authorization of bonds. In the bill itself, it creates the authority on page, starting on line 14 of page 2. That is the organization that would cross the T's and dot the I's, make sure the university is staying on budget, on time, recruiting the scientists, in all essence, authorizing the grant and the release of the money to build the building and the sale of the bonds.
Because early on, the finance had a different interpretation of that, but everybody now agrees, Mr. Fitzenreiter.
Madam Chair, the change in the dates in the bill and the amendment earlier did alter the finance department's original fiscal note, and I know they're probably here and could testify to that. And that change results in the projects hitting in years. The first, frankly, almost $200 million of debt that's authorized by this bill, but for the last project to actually hit the bonding years where you have the short amount of bonding capacity would not hit the big bonding years. So, for example, this year's $16.2 million would hit against your debt capacity that I understand, based on the debt capacity forecast, is $135 million.
Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Has the state done this before? I mean, we're making a bonding commitment for 5 years out, or five projects out over the next 10 years. So we would, in fact, be binding future capital investment legislative decisions. So that this, the way it's written, becomes part of the commitment for the bonding bill in 2010, 2012, 2014. And in those numbers, it's taking a big percent of the bonding bill assumed at that time. Has that ever been done before?
And Representative Peterson, I believe it's the first time, because that's why initially it was a relatively controversial idea.
That is correct. I asked for a, Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, I asked for a clarification. I think it is at my chair there, but you're correct. We've never done this before. We've got things that are kind of sort of similar, but never like at this particular way. But keep in mind, members, we can't bind the hands of a future legislature. We can make it a little bit more difficult, and it would be more difficult, but they certainly could undo this authorization in any particular year. If there was a reason to, or a crisis of some sort, they certainly can do that.
Representative Peterson?
Is there going to be some kind of a way that we can evaluate the success you're having and the fact that all this competition is going on between other universities? What if sometime the university decides it does not want to run this race in this particular technology and go a different direction? Who makes that decision, and when do they make it?
Mr. Fitzenreiter.
Madam Chair, members, I think the university is clearly committed to doing all of these projects, but in answer to that hypothetical, the university, I think, would simply not apply for one of the grants, and the bonds would sit there unused if it chose to go in a different direction.
Yeah. And Madam Chair, at that particular time, the legislature, there would, on that particular committee or author, Minnesota Biomedical Science Research Facility Authority, there will be four past and four current legislators. So the legislature would know about it. The legislature at that particular time could vote to remove that authorization.
Thank you, Manager. And I think we all understand that at some point this bill being passed could prejudice your future bonding requests for other items, given the amount of dollars available.
Mr. Fitzenreiter.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we designed this facilities authority to be very transparent, not trying to hide the ball. We have legislators on it. There's accountability features. You're going to know about it, and to the extent it influences future authorizations by the legislature. It's anybody's guess.
Right.
And any follow-up?
No, ma'am.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to be sure I understand the numbers here. You indicated, Mr. Fitzenreiter, that it's this the current total maximum that we have available, 135. You're looking for 16.1 for the first phase of this?
Madam Chair, members, the first impact of this bill would be $16.2 million on the authority that you have this session that I understand is $135 million. Yes.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, in effect, then, the university's request for 07 is $20 million plus the 16.2, so a total of $36.2 million. Is that correct?
Mr. Fitzenreiter.
Madam Chair, members, if you're talking about our HEPA request,
yes,
as well, yes, that's correct.
Madam Chair.
Representative Lanning.
In terms of next year, the big bonding year, what is the number there that you would be looking for the second year of this?
Madam Chair, from the Biomedical Facilities Authority standpoint,
yes,
we would not be back here next session. The $43.8 million that's on this handout would impact, based on the schedule of going to the authority requesting the grant, would hit the $135 million, the way I understand it, in the session after the big bonding session, 2 years from now.
Follow-up, Representative
Lanning? Yes, if I might, Madam Chair. Have you figured out yet for the 08 what your capital bonding request is going to be? Totally?
Yeah,
both
Madam.
Both HEPA and other facilities?
Yeah, Madam Chair, members, the HEPA request is likely to be in the neighborhood, as it has in the past, of around $80 million. And the rest of the request, which will deal with academic buildings and other renovations, the Board of Regents hasn't settled that particular list yet. That's probably in the neighborhood of, I think it'll probably be in the neighborhood of $175 to $200 million.
Just one final, Madam Chair, if I might. I would find it helpful if we could have these numbers on a sheet that kind of project this out so that we have some sense. To the extent that the numbers are generally known or contemplated at this point in time, I would find that helpful.
For the years 2007 and 2008.
And really beyond, you know, breaking up this 79 million over this 5 year or whatever number of years phase that we're talking about here. I think it would be helpful to have that information in front of us as we make the decision.
Madam Chair?
Representative Mahoney.
Representative Lanning, I'm not sure they can do it out for 15 years, but I will get Mr. Reuter to come up with as far out as they can go. And that may be 4 or 5 years, maybe six.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. I just want to get some picture here as to what the flow of this would be and what the chunks would be that we'd be looking at down the road, to the extent that's possible at this point in time.
Yeah, but I didn't want to raise false expectations. I don't think they can go out 15, 10 years, but I think they can go out 4 or 6 years.
Madam Chair, members, in the packet, however, for just the Biomedical Facilities Authority, there is a schedule. It doesn't have the particular dates that they would hit, but we can easily arrange that for you. And we also, I just will tell you, we do a six-year capital plan at the university that does include, and if you're interested in that, as well as this, we're happy to provide it.
Representative Lanning.
Yes, thank you.
And Representative Mahoney, Mr. Fitzenreiter, it's possible that at least some of us had a little more concern about the amendment because, frankly, with a 43 and a 65 and a 72 and an 80, putting it in the small bonding year, just looking past history, I mean, this year, for example, we're talking about $135 million total bill. If that's typical, you begin to see how when you get out to Building 5, one building at the university in the off year could be pretty much the dominant part of the bonding bill. And so I wonder if you could help us understand what's the rationale behind the amendment. I mean, in a sense, it would have been easier when you have a billion-dollar bill.
Madam Chair, the rationale behind the amendment is simply one of our ability to chunk through these in an orderly manner, recruit the faculty, build a building, go to the authority. It really is a two-year increment. We'd love to do it faster. We've looked with Representative Mahoney to try to do them faster. There is some mechanic, you know, it just takes some time.
Representative Peterson.
Madam Chair, I thank you for articulating that, because I was seeing that same issue. In the small bonding year, this takes it all. A, and so it's going to create a food fight in here. B, the food fight is going to be over HEPRA, and we at the state of Minnesota have our own HEPRA issue on the Capitol building that we gasped when we saw the number, that we can't handle the remodel of our own, and yet we're committing future generations to this project when we can't take care of our own. So, I mean, I love the university. I know what they're doing. We've been aware of it for some time, but all of a sudden the reality check is right now in this committee at this time, and saying we go ahead with this, we're making an enormous commitment that I'm not sure we're going to be able to perform.
Representative Mahoney.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, unless we as a state start to look at the investments that we make in the bioindustries, we may as well just fold it up and send it off to California, to Florida, to Arizona, to Massachusetts. We can't afford it. We just cannot afford to not step up to the plate and make it a priority for this state. We got very, very lucky with Medtronic because we did. We are not going to get that lucky. In my committee the day before yesterday, there is a company, and I won't mention their name, but they just went out to a trade show to sell their product in Ohio. The state of Ohio offered them a full free facility. They offered them a tax credit for every employee that they brought. And they offered them a $100,000 reward for every job they created in the state of Ohio. And this was not a Medtronic. This was just a 65-person biomedical. The state of Ohio was ready to offer them $6.5 million just to move, free, plus free facilities. If we do not invest somehow and start investing in the state, in our bioindustry, we are leaders. We lead in certain parts of it, but we will not be for very long. Not only will we not be a leader, we will not be a player. So yes, this takes up a tremendous amount of bonding capacity. This is not a risky proposition, but it is a bold proposition. It is taking a vision and saying we are going to invest in our state and we are going to move forward. I don't know that I can answer your question any other way.
Madam Chair.
Representative Peterson.
And I appreciate that. And I, just as a way of background, I personally knew and helped fund Earl Botkin.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew Palmer Hermsley. And I did the banking for Manny Villafana. So I know the history of these companies and the venture capital that took place. I mean, I know it intimately well. But I'm just saying that we as a body are making commitment to a wonderful university. We think you can do your part of it. The problem will be whether we as a bonding committee have the financial capacity to meet these obligations going forward. And it's going to be a real food fight if we come back in on a bonding bill and have to amend this because we can't make the commitment in 2011 or 2013. And I just think that needs to be in the testimony that we understand that when we vote for it.
And members, we did just check with Ms. Rankin, and we might be doing some more conversations. She said with this amendment, they had worked out some issues, and which she says there's a formula for, and so they'll have to kind of rework that based on the amendment. And so after we've had a chance to work with finance, we might, well, it possibly could even be at tomorrow's meeting. I don't know, but we'll work with them to see what the impact of the amendment is. Representative Mahoney, any concluding comments?
Well, Madam Chair, the Hospital Association was a little worried about these buildings going up as hospitals, and they brought some language to me. It's very late. I may ask you to bring the bill up so that I can add in an amendment that clarifies the fact that none of these buildings, none of this 600,000 square foot could be used as a hospital.
And but do you have that language today, or your?
I have it. I don't have it in very good language, and I don't know where it would go in the bill, so I don't want to. I would prefer to do it at some other place where I can have staff take a look at it and find the appropriate place for it.
Okay. Well, I think any further questions? If not, we've got one little final issue on our agenda, and we want to end on time. Were there additional questions? Did we miss any? Because the university is here now, so we don't want to cut anyone off. Members, the other day we acted on the Rural Finance Authority loans, and when we tried to find it, apparently when we went online, that House file didn't show up because, of course, we had a first committee in Grossman, and apparently should have had that in front of us. So we're going to Representative Junkie revisit House file number 274.
Well, members, you're all familiar with this. Simply, House File 274, I'd again move to amend line 1, bring the bill before the committee, recommendation to pass to finance. Then I'd offer amendment on line 1.6, change the $50 million to $30 million. And on line 1.22, change the $50 million to $30 million. And I believe if we adopt that and then move the bill to finance, hopefully I don't ever have to do this again this year in this committee.
Any question? Representative Lyman.
Madam Chair, a point of order. Do we need a motion to reconsider in order to act on it again?
It's a we didn't have the right engrossment, so that's an interesting question, Representative Lanning.
And of course, what we may even have to, because once we made that motion, we have this feeling that it was out of our possession to finance. But we didn't act on the right engrossment, so
didn't do a committee report.
If Representative, we did not do a committee report. If Representative Carlson were here, he could.
I'm happy to make that motion if it.
I don't want to cause you trouble. We want to get
our
this done.
Our bankers are waiting for this, Representative Lanning. So yeah, we want to get it done.
Want to get it done right. Thank you.
I think we're okay.
We'll give it a try anyway. If there's no further discussion.
Yeah, we were working on different engrossments, so this is a different file.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And if somebody tells us we did it wrong, we may.
You'll be here on Friday doing it again.
Representative Scalzi.
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve the minutes.
For March 13th at 6:30 in the evening, any discussion on those minutes? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Minutes are approved. And tomorrow is our last day for hearings, and we have quite a few, but we are just going to plug away and hopefully get through that and have some direction about a final bill. Meeting is adjourned.